The Future series. The Future series is probably one of my longest running series. Actually, after a while, it kind of took on a mind of its own identity even. It began as just a book called The Future, and it was just kind of like a little novella, and it starred a tough, no-nonsense drill instructor, and I put him in a futuristic world where America was invaded and taken over, and it turns out, I don't give too much away, but it's not what it seems as you listen to the book. And then I done The War, which directly follows that one. And then I had already had a string of books out, Jack Manson, the Death Calling Project, and others. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool, since that deals with the 1950s and also deals with cybernetic organisms, if I was to combine the two and make one really long series from it, beginning all the way back to the 50s. And I did. And so what it was Jack Manson, one of my earliest creations, has been jumping through different time periods. I've got him in actually one of the Sons of Thunder books, which takes place in 1800. I got him in a book that takes place in the 70s called The Entertainer. And I've got him in a modern book called The Jaguar. And I thought, how can I explain why he is in so many different books in so many different time periods? And I thought, the future. He sit there, he's sent throughout time to straighten out the future, because the future in the future book, the earth is under siege. And so Jack Manson is sent into the past, the present, future to bring a group of people together to help fight the threat. And so the book takes a span of, I'm not sure exactly, remember, at least 10 books, maybe more. And there's a few standalone books, but they all coincide. The Jaguar, The Legend of the Shark's Tooth, Death Calling's Revenge, which brings Death Calling from the 50s to the future, and then The Future's End. And I think The Future's End is the third of the original future books. And The Future's End is what ties all the rest together. And then the final book actually deals with the actual time travel itself, with Sergeant Kane traveling back to the 50s to where Jack Manson was originally. So it can be a very confusing book, but also an interesting book if you really listen to the books in order. And on my website, Author Tim Simpson, My World, you can get a list of all the books as they play out in order from the very first to the last. There will not be another future book because they're done. The whole series is finished, and which opened up a whole new universe of mine, which brought in Jack Manson back into the 50s and then the noir series, Detroit Noir. Was able to do that because it kind of placed everyone back where they're supposed to be. And all that gets explained in the books. It's just something that's really fun to listen to, and it's like you really don't know what's going to happen, because one book in particular, it starts out as just an everyday story, and then boom, events start to unfold, and it sets off a chain of events, and that's where the future actually starts. But it's a really interesting listen if you like really big epic kind of stories. I recommend you listen to it.
Chapter 5. The tank thread thundered hard across the solid desert sand. The sun beat down with its unforgiving rays, causing the interior of the tanks to be more humid than a human could stand. But stood it, these humans could. The ground rumbled as 15 old war trucks moved quickly toward the once glorious, if not sinful, city of Las Vegas. Sergeant Kind was on a mission. He, amidst the protest of Sergeant Hernandez, was on what some would call a suicide mission. a mission where all odds were against him returning alive. However, he had beat such odds before. He was riding the lead tank, a custom tank he had always preferred. Behind the 15 tanks were two jeeps, a deuce and a half, along with several trucks, all containing the soldiers the sergeant himself had trained. Sergeant Kind had been planning this attack for over a year now. Ever since he and his troops took over the compound, he had been trying to retake Las Vegas. Vegas was not lambasted by the enemy. The city was in no way a threat to the invaders, but they did want to control the desert that surrounded the magnificent attraction. They hit Sin City hard, killing almost all of the inhabitants with one solid blow. The military did very little in the way of helping, and the city, it seemed, was an easy grab. However, the sergeant cares nothing about the city itself. He just wants the invaders gone. He wants to control the desert in hopes to build up his own resistance, maybe push the enemy back enough to get a foothold on the wasteland, enough to have at least a fighting chance against the overwhelming odds. However, in order to do that, many of his soldiers will have to die. This is the only way that hope will survive. The tank that carried the sergeant stopped just beyond a tall wire fence that surrounded the city. He lifted his binoculars that hung around his neck for a better look. "Hmm," he muttered, as he turned his head from right to left. "What do you see, Sergeant?" asked Corporal Arnold Anderson, as he popped his head from a porthole atop the tank. "Nothing. I don't see a soul," Sergeant Kind growled. "Radio back and tell the troops to ready themselves. We are moving forward. Also, keep a third eye. This could be a trap," he added, as he lowered his binoculars. His boots crunched the hard sand as he leapt from the jeep. He looked back once as he started forward toward the large alien structure. Harold leaned his head back to look at the sky. It was clearer than it had been in a long time. The birds were flying overhead. A still breeze had started to blow, tussling his thinning hairline. "This would be a beautiful day to die," he thought, as he brought his head back level to face the building. "Okay, Harold. You're the hero now. Don't mess this up," thought Harold Hunter, as he continued forward. He rounded a large rock, which served to hide the remaining men and their jeep. His stomach started getting queasier as he slowly continued his approach. Then he heard something. Something moaning. Not a moan one would hear from pain or pleasure. In fact, not even a moan one would hear from a human. A metallic moan began to echo from the top of the structure. Hunter had no idea what to expect. He slowly lifted his eyes upward. His mind began to think of the possibilities that could befall him soon. Would he see men fly out from the top of the structure? Or would he see an alien spaceship, perhaps? His thought conjured all sorts of scenarios. But after only a few seconds of contemplating the possibilities, all he saw was an arm extending from the top of the circular building. The arm looked to be like something used on a construction site to lift heavy beams to the top of the skeletal skyscrapers. Then, the arm unfolded once it reached its full length. And then, the cloud of dust shot into the air. The only thing that remained of Harold Hunter was his boots. The four remaining soldiers sat in the jeep in disbelief at what they had just witnessed. All of them had been fighting this war for years now, and none had seen anything like what had just happened. Some sort of green light emanated from the globe at the height of the arm and had vaporized Hunter. And then it slowly descended back into its shell. Sergeant Kind stepped his once glossy boot onto the dried and cracked sand that covered the area surrounding the magnificent city they called Las Vegas. He slowly glanced over his shoulder to his troops that stood ready for battle. but it was all quiet. Too quiet. "Sarge, where is everyone?" asked Deborah O'Hara as she climbed down from atop her tank. The sergeant did not answer. He looked back at the gate that his army had just rolled over the top of as if it were made of rice paper. "I don't know, but just keep your eyes open and let me know if anyone else sees any movement." The team slowly made their way to the edge of the enormous gambling town and then stopped. The distant televisions could be heard, but nothing else. "Sarge, do you really think it's over? Are we now in peacetime?" asked O'Hara. Sergeant Kynes squinted his eyes at the lieutenant, although she could not tell this through the mirrored sunglasses that he wore. He never said a word as he looked back to the city that sat like a ghost town. "Wait here," Sergeant Kynes said, as he made his way down the center of the street that once bustled with gamblers, drug dealers, prostitutes, and gangsters. He could see into the enormous picture windows as he walked. The glitter and all the lights had come back since the crossfire had occurred, but there was little else in the way of movement. He reached down to his side and unfastened the top of the strap of his holster that carried his M1911 pistol. He gripped the shotgun that he had grabbed from one of his men upon leaving his base. His helmet set tight on his large scalp as he continued to turn his neck from side to side. Thoughts traveled through the sergeant's mind as he made his way down the deserted road. Then, a faint noise caught his attention. It wasn't coming from the street, but it was getting louder by the second. His eyes began to look upwards. "Fall back!" the sergeant shouted, as two enemy jets came into view. Sergeant Kine turned to try to warn his troops, but the jets were much faster than the older man. "What are we going to do now?" asked Marcus St. John, as he sat with his eyes facing the floor of the jeep. "There's not much that can be done. That thing is a fortress, and that arm that came out was some sort of laser," Clint said, as he turned his head to look over his shoulder at the two soldiers that sat directly behind him. It was at that moment he caught a glimpse of a man walking up behind the jeep. "It's Shadow. What are you doing here?" Allie Burnett said, as she leapt from her seat and onto the sand-covered surface. The man known as Shadow was the best covert man that Sergeant Kine had on his team. He was wounded earlier in the war, losing half of his lower jaw and vocal cords, and this forced him to keep his head and face covered behind dark sunglasses and a dark black ski mask. His real name was Mark Tully. He was actually a martial arts instructor when the war happened, but he was wounded while trying to save a woman and her child from being abducted. Upon seeing Allie, he pulled a notepad from his rear pocket. Clint followed up behind Allie as she watched Shadow hand her a note that read, "Entrance on the other side. The building is..." Once she reached the end of the note, Shadow quickly handed her another one to finish his thought. "Guarded by machines. The colonel is inside." "Can we get in, though?" asked Clint. Shadow quickly nodded his head yes. "Okay, how?" asked Allie, as she looked from Clint to Shadow. "Everyone take cover," said a soldier, as he leapt from his tank. The bombs dropped fast and hard. Men and women were scrambling from their vehicles to find some sort of shelter. Private John Roberts landed hard on his back. He looked up to the sky in a vain attempt to figure out which way he should run, but it was too late. Private Roberts' face felt a flush of heat, and then he felt nothing. The explosions rocked the very earth in which the soldiers stood. Sergeant Kine watched as the jets bombarded his unit, but still he ran toward the attack. There were two jets that had dropped low and let loose two missiles. Each one disintegrated four tanks on impact. Deborah O'Hara was thrown away from the attack. She landed hard, crashing through a window, landing at the foot of a row of unused slot machines. She quickly pulled herself to her feet. She looked to her left. She saw the sergeant duck from suddenness of the explosions. She could see as he watched the jets line themselves for yet another pass at the team. And for just a brief moment, their eyes met. He could see, even from the distance he was standing, the fear in her eyes, as she knew she was about to die a horrible death. She looked at her commander. He was strong and brave, and she knew even after she was dead, he would continue and fight. In fact, the man might actually live forever. She smiled at the thought, and then the sounds that only a machine gun can make came tearing into the building. In only a matter of seconds, her body was torn into numerous parts as she fell to the floor dead. He pulled his M1911, but in reality, he knew it would be little or no use against the jets. "Get in here!" he heard a voice yell from across the street. His eyes were blurry. Even though the explosion was several yards away, he could feel the heat from the burning metal behemoths as they set suffering from flames that reduced them to little more than chunks of coal. He had the last look of the young woman's face etched in his mind now. Why was she smiling? He thought, as he turned sharply and made a run for the open doorway that led into the lobby of the hotel. Sergeant Kine made a leap as one of the enemy jets made another killing pass, dropping heavy machine gun fire as they passed overhead. He came to a stop, landing on his shoulder, hard against the oak bar that set along the entrance wall. He lifted his .45 up to eye level as he called out, "Who's in here?" "Just a friend, partner," a voice called out. "I have been stuck in here ever since the enemy pulled up stakes." "They almost took everyone with them," the voice said. Then, there was silence. No gunfire. "The jets are leaving," Sergeant Kind said, as he peered out the window that he had just shattered. "I've never seen weapons or vehicles like these," said the voice. This time it sounded closer. "They took out my whole unit," said the sergeant, as he turned his head to look behind him. He could see the man that almost certainly saved his life. The cowboy stood a little over 6 feet tall. However, the cavalry hat he had worn made him seem even taller. Of course, so did the brown cowboy boots that he had on his feet. He sported a blonde handlebar mustache that ran along the sides of his thinning, protruding jawline. As he stepped from behind the overturned pile of slot machines, he placed a single-action six-shooter inside a holster that hung low on each side of his thin legs. "They call me Wild Bill Monroe," he said, with his Texas drawl, "and I've been stuck in this place for over a month now. They almost had me a couple of times, but I was a little slicker than they was," Wild Bill said, as he stepped beside the sergeant. "Who are you? You with the reinforcements? Because I haven't seen any of our boys around here in over a year." "Yeah, no military left," the sergeant said, as he looked the lean cowboy over and pushed himself to an upright sitting position using the heels of his boots. "I was a pilot for a while. That's till we lost power anyway." "A pilot? What branch?" "Oh, no branch. I flew helicopters for the fat cats around here. Just local stuff. And then the invaders came and destroyed everything and took everyone. Actually, they left just a few weeks ago. But I guess not all of them went," Bill said, as he looked out of the same window in which Sergeant Kine was still looking. "I'm sorry about your team," he said, as he watched the flames smoldering over the melted cannons of the tanks. "I'm getting used to it, or so it would seem. You know, these invaders, they are not from Earth." "How's that?" Bill said, sounding amazed at the sudden statement. "I was on their spaceship. I killed hundreds. These people we are fighting and killing are our own people, and they turned them into robots. Or something, the sergeant said, as he lowered his eyes to the broken and cracked flooring of the once grand hotel. I watched some of their prototypes, and then their advancements. The first ones that were sent were just drones. They abducted our people and changed them into mindless fiends and sent them back after us. They used people from all over Earth, all nationalities, all races. That's why we can't stop them. And they destroyed our technology. So what about the ceasefire? That is just a ruse to call us out, so that they can transform us into mindless slaves as well. And you say you were on their spaceship? Yes. We launched a ship of our own in hopes of preserving some sort of existence. But in reality, we were doing exactly what it was they wanted. We were doomed from the beginning. My gosh. I did not hear anything about that. All I knew was these strange-looking crafts were attacking us. The sarge paused a minute before looking up to the cowboy. You said you're a pilot? Yeah, that's right. These crafts were not made here. They were obviously made on one of their ships, which means, he continued, as he snapped his finger and thumb together, they can take us back up there. What are you saying? I am saying, if I get us one of those ships, like the ones that just dive-bombed us, do you think you could pilot it? Well, I can fly almost anything. But you said those things were alien. Yeah, but the principle has to stay the same, reasoned the sergeant, as he looked back at what was left of his troops. And besides, I have a score to settle, and I mean to end it all if it means the very end of my life.